She makes me lie down in green meadows beside the still waters. She will. She restores my soul. She rides my horse. She leads me in a path of good things. And fills my heart with song. Even though I walk through a dark and dreary land, there is nothing that can shake me. She has said she won't forsake me. She sets a table before me in the presence of my foes. She anoints my head with oil and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will live in her house forever, forever and ever. To our mother and daughter, and to the Holy of Holies, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be.
Thank you. Good evening. Welcome. We're glad you're with us today. We also welcome those that are live streaming, and we are grateful that you've chosen to spend part of your evening with us. Thank you. Tonight, we'll look at the seven last words of Jesus. Now, obviously, these seven words were taken from the four Gospels, and yet we teach that Jesus is fully human and yet divine. So my prayer this evening for me, and perhaps for you, is that you will feel the feelings of these seven last words and know that Jesus felt the pain as well. And then also tonight, perhaps we will move a little further than that, and we will look at the metaphysical interpretation of these last words as well. We're glad you're with us. Tonight, you notice that we're wearing stoles. Don't you kind of like them? You know, so, you know, we wear them on special occasions. And I love my teacher, Joel Goldsmith, who talks about stepping into the stole as a clergy person. And he says that when we step into a stole, we do not step into that to separate ourselves, but we step into it to remind us that we have stepped into service, to service to you and with you at this time in our lives. So that's why we've chosen to wear the stoles tonight. Also, we have on duty tonight our Unity prayer chaplains. I'm going to invite them to please stand. Beautiful. These individuals arrived early and they held sacred space here in this sanctuary. And tonight, they're here to hold that space with you, to listen with the ears of their heart, to pray aloud with you, and then to hold what they have heard in the strictest of confidence. So tonight, if you have a prayer request, by all means, seek out a Unity prayer chaplain. Thank you, and you may be seated. Again, thank you for being here tonight, and we certainly welcome those that are live streaming with us tonight as well. Thank you.
And when we gather together here, we do so with a sense of grace, a sense of peace and prosperity. So I would ask at this time to go into your heart and recognize a gift in return to Unity Minneapolis. I'm going to ask our ushers to come forward. For those of you live streaming, there is a way to make that gift online. For us here, there is an offering QR code on one of the slips in our pew. There's also offering envelopes. And of course, there's always an online and a mail. But in this moment, let us hold in our heart the knowing that as we give, we receive. It is that circulation of love that supports this community and this community as it supports us and the larger community. So I'd ask you now if you would say with me our offertory prayer, our blessing. Divine love flowing through me blesses and multiplies all that I give, all that I receive, and all that I am. Amen.
The word is forgive. The affirmation is I freely forgive all others and myself. Your affirmation is in your order of service. Let's affirm that together. Together, I freely forgive all others and myself. In Luke's gospel, Jesus is so attuned to divine love that he asks forgiveness for those who are putting him to death. Jesus' example inspires me to release any resentment, bitterness, or anger I feel, no matter how much I believe those feelings are justified. I recognize that unwillingness to forgive blocks my awareness of love's flow. If the burden of resentment is so overwhelming that I feel I cannot forgive, my willingness opens the way. I am willing to forgive. I hold this thought, repeating it silently each time the memory of a past hurt arises, feeling my willingness grow stronger and stronger with each repetition. I feel renewed peace and joy as the strength of divine love heals my heart and releases unforgiveness. I forgive, and I am free. And then Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Luke 23:34.
Tonight, we gather to hear the story of Jesus' last days and his last words. I invite you to sit in meditation, to touch the experience through the special music, the readings, and the candlelight. Let us reach into the dark places of our own souls when we have betrayed another for a payoff that proved worthless, as it might seem with Judas. When we have failed to act with courage and commitment, as it might seem with Peter. When our commitment seems to bring us only betrayal or even death, as it might seem with Jesus. When we have come to church to reaffirm our community of faith, and we find ourselves feeling alienated and in doubt. When we feel that proclamations of joy, peace, tolerance and love are just empty words of hypocrisy. When we feel that there is no place for that which we hold dear. Tonight, in this place, let us silently remember our shortcomings and forgive ourselves. Let us remember those who have failed us and forgive them, recognizing our common humanity. We will mourn our losses, lost dreams, lost opportunities, lost relationships. We will know and affirm the strength to begin again. We remember the times when we have acted with excellence, integrity, and purpose. We will remember the times when we have reached out with compassion and with love. We will celebrate our passage from dark times to renewal, to love and light. And we will remember that we have not made this journey alone. We have been sustained by family and friends, old and new, who have given us the gift of acceptance and love. We have been and continue to be held in infinite love.
I am not mistakes that I have made, or any of wrongs that caused me pain. I am not the pieces of the dream I left behind. I am light. I am light. I am light.
Now, after Jesus was betrayed by Judas and arrested, he was taken to the Sanhedrin to be examined, and Peter, one of his disciples, followed along behind. Peter waited outside and went to the fire the servants had built to warm themselves. As the servants were gathered and talking about the events of the evening, one of them recognized Peter and said, "Surely you know this man, for I have seen you with him." Peter responded that he had never met Jesus. And a little later, another servant said, "Aren't you one of his people? Haven't I seen you listening to him teaching?" And Peter began to get afraid and angry and said again that he did not know him. And then yet another said, "But you're a Galilean. I know I've seen you among his followers." And with an oath, Peter swore that he did not know Jesus. Immediately, the cock crowed and Peter was ashamed. Meanwhile, the Sanhedrin examined Jesus to catch him in heresy. Many came and testified against him, but Jesus simply maintained his silence. Finally, they decided to hand Jesus over to Pilate, the Roman governor, claiming that he was guilty of sedition against Rome. But even Pilate could find no guilt in him. Yet for political reasons and because he really didn't care one way or another, Pilate handed him over to the soldiers to be crucified.
The usual procedure, the soldiers stripped Jesus and beat him severely and forced him to carry the cross up the hill where crucifixions were held, called Golgotha in Aramaic and Calvary in Latin. On the way, someone forced a crown woven of thorns onto his head, and all mocked him and even spit on him. But those who were his followers followed along behind, quietly and afraid. And when they reached the hill, the soldiers bound him to the cross and left him to die, naked, bleeding, and in disgrace. Metaphysically, the crucifixion represents crossing out that which no longer serves. When life calls us to change and grow into our greater selves, there is often that which must be eliminated. During these times of crucifixion or crossing out and letting go, many of us get stuck in the tunnel of transformation. The inability to move forward in our process is what creates suffering. As Jesus hung on the cross, we are told that he spoke seven times. These seven last words can be used to guide us through the tunnel of transformation. Tonight, let us hear those words and consider them metaphysically.
From Luke 23:34, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Jesus asked that forgiveness occur from a higher place of consciousness, a consciousness that can be used to do that which our human selves cannot imagine. We only need to be willing to let the love of spirit that knows no other, no harm, and no offense, create the miracle that forgiveness offers. Forgiveness sets us free so that we may ascend baggage-free into a higher, lighter, and more fulfilling way of being. We cannot transform into a greater expression of love and bring with us resentments and remnants of our victim stories. The first step in our journey, therefore, is to clear the slate and release ourselves from the belief that we can be persecuted. Forgiveness does this. And the brilliance of these first words of Jesus is that all that we need to is call upon a greater power to do it through, for, and as us.
Sacred love is all that you are. You are sacred love. Sacred love is all that you are.
Show the way.
Show the way, God, show the way. I want to live in such a state of grace. Lead the way, God, lead. Such a holy place, such a holy place.
Truly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. Luke Chapter 23, verse 43. Paradise is another word for the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is at hand, available to us all, but it can only be experienced, as Jesus said, today in the present moment. Jesus made this statement to the two men who were being hanged to the right and left of him. In metaphysical interpretation, these two men might represent the past and the future. There is much good in our memories of the past and in our ideas of who we are becoming in the future. Jesus' statement, however, suggests that we must be in the present moment, today, in order to access our greater and higher selves. When we allow this saying of Jesus to have its mystical way with us, we become fully immersed in the now, which is the only place transformation can occur.
Truly,
Woman, behold your son, behold your mother, John 19:26. These words were spoken to Mary, the mother of Jesus, and to the disciple John. At first glance, this statement seems odd. Why would Jesus say this to his mother and disciple? It could be an important part of the blueprint inherent within the guide towards resurrection. It speaks to oneness and right relationship with each other. We can only awaken to our spiritual power and evolution when we release ourselves from the roles of biological family, husband, wife, mother, father, son, daughter, Catholic, Jew, black, white, rich, poor. This third saying of Jesus invites us to behold all people as our family, for truly, we are one with God.
the face of God. I hold you in my heart. You are a part of me. You are the face of God. You are the face of God. I hold you in my heart. You are a part of me. You are the face of God.
My God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Matthew 27:46. The truth is that God cannot and does not forsake us. However, part of us, our victim consciousness, still clings to the belief that there is something outside of us that has power over us. Jesus knew there was no power outside of him, and yet in the midst of fully surrendering to this truth, he demonstrated that fear can have a voice. It may be that Jesus was setting the example, telling us that we don't need to hide our fear, but speak it out loud. Bring it to the light of prayer. It's because Jesus had faith that he could freely speak the fear of betrayal out loud. We can't make fear go away by hiding from it. We can transform it by bringing it to the light of love.
I thirst, from John chapter 19, verse 28. To thirst is to desire that which gives us life. To thirst for new life represents the time of our transformation, when the darkness begins to fade and new possibilities begin to form in consciousness. The idea of greater good glimmers, even if ever so faintly. Often during this time, the old ways of being suddenly look very attractive, or we tend to want to rush into the first idea that comes to us for relief. This is actually the time to cultivate the thirst and to hold still. The universe will give us very clear signs if we are willing to take time to listen. We are sitting in the greatest moment of possibility. So the goal is to allow the greatest idea of ourselves to come to life. Let God quench the thirst by showing us our highest and best good. Our job is simply to say yes to it and allow it.
This world as it is, go inside to find my God. I will leave this world as it is, go inside to find my God. Inside there is peace, inside there is joy, inside there is more than enough. Inside
it is finished, John 19:30. Jesus' sixth statement reveals to us the perfection of the laws of the universe and spiritual completion. When we've completely aligned spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically, we can move mountains. The catch is that we truly need to be finished. We can't fool the law. The universe loves us so unconditionally that it patiently waits for our readiness and willingness to be free, and it behooves us to consciously call what is done, done. In this part of our journey of transformation, we can honor ourselves and our path by creating a ritual of completion. It is finished can be the most transformational words we speak. These words clear the slate, cut the cords of attachment, cleanse and prepare us on all levels for the next and most powerful step of all.
It is finished. It is finished. It is finished.
Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Luke 23:46. Jesus' statement of surrender is so simple and moving. We can hear the relief in his voice when we read these words. Surrender is the most important practice on our journey of transformation. All we are truly seeking is to know God in and as our life. All our spirit wants to experience is the kingdom of heaven. Surrender is a mystical step. Even though we may have a sense of what we're being called to do, we can't know who we'll become. To give to God all the glory, to place our lives in his hands. The relinquishment of our sense of control is frightening, but a little taste of the sweet joy in it is all that we need to take that step. To be used by God with no attachment to the form that it takes, this is the ultimate freedom and is what we are all striving for.
my body, my soul are part of a perfect whole. My heart and my hands are serving a sacred plan. I know that it's true.
At the point of Jesus' death, one of the Roman soldiers who was there and had watched him and listened to him teaching remarked with sadness that he was truly a son of God. Among Jesus' followers was a wealthy man named Joseph from the town of Arimathea. Joseph went to Pilate and asked for Jesus' body, that he might bury it. Pilate agreed, and the body was taken down and turned over to Jesus' followers. They prepared it, wrapped it in a fresh shroud, and laid it in Joseph's tomb. And then they sealed the tomb with a huge stone and went away to mourn. Jesus' life is truly a demonstration of unconditional love, unconditional faith, and unconditional surrender. His final teaching in his death and resurrection contains within it all the support and guidance we need for our own journey of transformation. The divine light of the Christ within each of us is never, ever extinguished. You are welcome to sit and meditate if you wish, and when you are ready, we invite you to depart in silence and reflection, wishing you peace.
Peace of